Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. And this will be the last show before we get very draft intensive. We will not have a show on Thursday, but the following Monday, we will talk draft strategy. We will talk positions of need. And then we will get into our annual draft preview of every single position group, leading right up until our final draft show, which will be 2 days before the NFL draft. But first, we have this show, and we are brought to you by Prize Picks. Use promo code for you out-of-staters. Five, F-I-V-E. You deposit $100, you get $100. It's as simple as that. And for you in-staters, you could go to betteredge.com/5reasons. That's the number 5 reasons. And you get $20 just for signing up. And we will have an announcement on a new sponsor next week, but that's for next week. I was told not to mention their name until next week. It's an old sponsor returning for a week. Spoiler alert, it's factormeals.com. All right, guys.
Now they're not going to be a sponsor. You've just ruined it.
Well, yeah, I was going to announce it again next week, but it's an old sponsor that was with us for 6 months. So they're just coming back for a month for draft month. Very opportunistic, this sponsor, right?
Of course.
Extremely opportunistic. Well, it's the owners' meetings, and which means Mike McDaniel's putting on a fashion show once again. By the way, Good Morning Football. I don't know if you saw this, Simon. I want to start with you, and we're going to talk a little bit about Odell Beckham, and in the second half, we're going to talk about the new rules, especially this kickoff rule, which is fascinating because it changes the game, really, for a lot of teams. But in these owners' rules, did you see Good Morning Football this morning, and they showed Sean McDermott and what he's worn to the owners, the coaches' meetings for the last 6 years? Did you see that?
I didn't see it, but I did see him in the photo he had on the Panda Dunks. Is it, if that's what you're talking about?
At night, he had the blue blazer.
Right. Oh, I see it.
Would you be surprised to learn that he's worn a blue blazer 6 years in a row? And in 3 of those 6 years, he wore the same exact shirt he wore in this photo.
Maybe he just likes the shirt.
Yeah, this is a man that probably does not own very many suits.
I'd imagine his wife picks out his clothes for him like Kirk Cousins does.
And then just forgets every single year which one they picked out last year. Like, this one looks good.
Yeah. Mike Tomlin and Sean Payton, Nick Sirianni, and I'm missing somebody. Oh, Matt Eberflus. Although, who the hell knows what Matt Eberflus looks like? Did not show for the photo, but they're there in person.
Yeah, but anyway, I still don't know what Matt Eberflus looks like. I would not recognize
him. I think I do. But like, if you showed me a picture, you could fool me. Like, if you showed me a picture of somebody else, like, you could probably fool me. But Mike McDaniel at these meetings confirmed Odell Beckham has an offer in hand. And evidently that offer was made last Thursday, I believe. So if that's the case, what's taking so long? What do you suspect is happening at this moment with Odell Beckham, Simon?
It's a business. I mean, clearly the contract that Miami have offered is not a contract that Odell wants. I suspect he'll test the market, or his agent will claim that he's test the market, and there's clearly a mutual interest there. I just, you know, the numbers have got to work for both sides. I mean, you know, for Miami, he's obviously, you know, he'll be 32 midway through the season. You know, he's in his, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This will be his 12th NFL season. And over the last 3 years, he's played 28 of a possible 51 games. I mean, he's missed almost half the games that he was eligible for because of injury. He's had 2 ACL tears. You know, so clearly there's a price point for Miami, and there's a price point for Odell, and they've got to try and work a way to find a happy medium, knowing that there's a strong possibility that even if he does sign, he's probably not going to make it all the way through the season. And where have we heard that before? You know, so good player still. And I think people there's been quite a lot of sort of pearl clutching on social media about how he's not the same player and he sucks and this and that. We should be signing, you know, Tyler Boyd, and we should be signing Hunter Renfrow, and you know, Beckham is better than both of those and still remains better than both of those. And even a casual dig into his tape, like even last season with the Ravens, will show you how much better he is than those two receivers. But, you know, it all comes down to money, and, you know, the things have got to match up, and I wouldn't be surprised if it gets done, but it's clearly not going to get done at the moment. I think for Miami, Chris, they'd probably like to get it done before the draft because it gives them a bit of an idea of how they're going to map things out. And, you know, it's obvious the way that stuff was fed to Barry Jackson that Miami really likes him. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a deal got done pre-draft just because it gives Miami the opportunity to kind of take the board as it comes to them, Chris.
Yeah, I think that was the apparent, it's becoming more apparent as they go, because for a while it looked like, you know, hey, they've addressed everything except offensive line and wide receiver. And I think I tweeted something about it, you know, the goal would probably be to make sure that you don't have glaring needs heading into picks, you know, 21 and 55. But at the same time, what's this draft heavy on? It's heavy on offensive linemen, it's heavy on wide receivers toward the top. So that would be kind of convenient matching. Then they went ahead and continued on with the offensive line. You know, they got Jack Driscoll, who can probably start the whole year at right guard if you wanted him to. And now they're playing around with Odell Beckham. I think the outrage over him and the fact that he has a contract offer in hand but has not signed are tied to one another, because the outrage is related to, hey man, that guy collected $16 million last year, mm-hmm. from the Baltimore Ravens. And so, you know, everybody is thinking big numbers for Odell Beckham. And so when people are like, ah, he's not even close to the player, they're still thinking about that number, I think. And I think that that's probably a mistake, because the reason that he has an offer in hand and not an offer signed is because Miami's offer is not anywhere near $16 million. So I think that yes, a lot of teams are going to look at him and say he's a big injury risk, he's not the player he once was, he'll be 32 years old, everything that Simon described. And so he's looking at possibly coming to Miami because, hey, guess what? Miami's a good destination. You know, go figure. You know, Florida, state taxes, the Miami area, you know, everything that we usually talk about. But in addition to that, you know, free agents are citing, I mean, Drew Rosenhaus talked about it, said that the guys that signed with Miami are citing the NFLPA report about how well they treat their players. They're pretty much number one in the league that way. And they are citing also Hard Knocks and Mike McDaniel and, you know, even Tua Tagovailoa as being attractive coaches, teammates, what have you. So you're trying to get him here on a big discount, lots of incentives on the contract, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what Miami are trying to, that's the narrow path Miami are trying to walk with him right now. And he's, you know, I think that he is very prudently going to wait a little bit and see if anything better comes down the road, particularly a team that ends up, you know, desperate for one reason or another. Maybe get another $16 million payday, not from Miami, but, you know, from somewhere. But Miami's offer is not going to be even close to that, in my opinion. But I do think he could contribute very well. I mean, I was surprised by how much juice he did have on tape last year when I went back and looked at the Ravens tape. And I think that if you're looking at the roles that, say, Cedric Wilson played, and the things that they asked him to do, aside from the blocking, which I don't think Odell Beckham is going to do like Cedric Wilson did. But the receiving aspect of it, you know, yeah, I think that's a big upgrade.
Yeah, he does not drop passes, period. It's just not something he does. There's a great stat of his. You know how many drop passes he has in the red zone in his career, Simon? Career. Zero. He had three last year. He's had four seasons of one drop in each of those seasons. He just does not drop the ball. Now, what does it say about what the Dolphins thought about their 11 personnel grouping that they've gone out to get Odell Beckham and they already have Jonnu Smith, which kind of tells you why would you want Braxton Berrios back, but I guess he's going to return punts. But it's obvious that they think what we thought, which was their wide receiver three was just poor last year. It's not a good group. So they're just on the same page as we are, Simon, or are they thinking a little bit further ahead?
I think that you've got to think that, you know, that we've talked about this for 2 years. There is a target problem on this offense. You know, Tyreek is an all-timer. He's a Hall of Famer. He is targeted repeatedly and probably more than he should be. And I think it was obvious that him and Jalen wore down at the end of the year just through injuries and, you know, must be the wear and tear on hips and knees and those sorts of things, feet and ankles must be horrendous in terms of, you know, what you put, the power that you put through those areas of the body. And when they did break down, there was nobody to step up. And you go back to that game against Buffalo and the most critical throw of the season, we're trying to throw to Chase Claypool. And that tells you everything you need to know really about where this team was at the receiver position. And look, we all like River Craycraft as a kind of a special teams contributor, a guy that can step up, a guy that can block. I was surprised that Berrios came back, but it does seem to me that they are putting a little bit of money into positions like defensive tackle, like wide receiver. And I don't necessarily think all these guys are going to make the team. You know, I think you throw in a Braylon Sanders, you throw in Eric Ezukanma, you throw in Craycraft, you throw in Beckham, you throw in Waddle and Hill. You know, there's already a numbers game that probably doesn't make complete sense. And then you got the draft. And we know that they like Xavier Worthy because Mike McDaniel was at the Texas Pro Day and he looked like a kid at Christmas and just been given his first bike when he shook hands with him. We know he was at the Michigan Pro Day with Cornelius Johnson and with Roman Wilson. You know, we know there are receivers in this draft that the team like, you know, and that makes a lot of sense, that position. So they need to spread the love a little bit more in terms of who catches the ball. And if Tyreek only ends up with 85 catches or 80 catches, but he's healthy in the playoffs and he's healthy at the end of the season, I think we'd all take that. If Jalen only gets 65 catches, but he's healthy at the end of the season, I think we all take that. But if Jonnu Smith has 50 catches and Odell Beckham has 35 catches, and for argument's sake, Xavier Worthy has 40 catches and, you know, River Craycraft has 30 catches and whoever else has, you know, a bunch of catches, Ezukanma has 25 catches, then I think, you know, if the wealth is spread out a little bit more, it just keeps people healthy and it keeps people healthy for the important part of the season. And also, let's not forget, both Waddle and Hill had some significant issues with drops at times. And I'm sure that in part is down to a possible overuse as well. So I don't think we can go into the season with the receiver room the same as it was. I think they need to improve positions 3 through 5. And that's what they're doing, and that's what Beckham potentially will do.
By the way, clarification, Beckham has one drop in the red zone in his career. He has zero drops in the end zone for his career. That's the stat.
Well, one thing that you have to remember is I keep saying about this wide receiver position for Miami and for the Dolphins in particular, is this is such a wide receiver-driven offense that they ask a lot of the wide receivers. They really do. And Simon kind of put it on the, you know, just in terms of how many balls are being thrown to those two guys, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, you know, that itself is asking a lot of them. But I mean, if you think about what they have to do in this offense, they have to, you know, be great teammates. They have to be great blockers. They have to be absolute technicians. Just flawless technicians in terms of getting off the line, getting into and out of their breaks at exactly the right time, because this is such a timing-driven offense with Tua throwing with anticipation, with, you know, as QB school would say, JT O'Sullivan, you know, capital A anticipation all the time. Sometimes just throwing at times, and it's like, you know, the guy just, he hasn't even made his break yet, and you know, to his throw into a spot, and he's going to be there or he's not going to be there. They're asking a lot of these wide receivers to do all of that, be good blockers, be good teammates, be good fast, be technical, be, oh yeah, and by the way, you know, be excellent run after catch guys and just all around good playmakers. This is why it's so absurd to think about trading Jaylen Waddle, in my opinion, because this is such a wide receiver driven offense, and they're asking so much that you can't, when you find guys that can run it, you hold on to them. You hold on to Tyreek Hill. You hold on to Jaylen Waddle. And they have cycled through a number of other receivers and not found one. You know, whether we're talking about Trent Sherfield and River Craycraft and Robbie Chosen and Cedric Wilson, who they gave a big contract to, people forget, in free agency. It was an $8 million a year contract. That's even bigger than, you know, the contract they gave out to the starting center, Aaron Brewer, and bigger contract than they gave Connor Williams. So they've cycled through a number of receiver options. Braxton Berrios, toss him in there, and none of them have measured up. None of them have measured up. And I think that that just is a testament to how wide receiver intensive this offense is. And that's possibly why they need to, you know, extend and make the effort to go get a veteran like Odell Beckham, a guy, you know, who has been around, has such a feel for the game, has such a feel for the timing, and is more on the reliable side as far as being where he needs to be, when he needs to be there, and catching the ball and finishing the play. You know, I think that that's really what this speaks to. And it's also why, you know, wide receivers sitting atop the priority list when they head to 21 overall, 55 overall in the draft, even if they do sign Odell Beckham.
All right. Before we go to break, one last thing, and I think Simon can handle this one. Quez Watkins has been tied to the Dolphins as having, there's some mutual interest there. Your thoughts on Quez Watkins? That's obviously a fallback option. Obviously.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, again, doesn't do an awful lot for me, I think, and probably is a negotiating tool, I suppose, in many respects, in terms of, you know, feels like there's a veteran to be signed that isn't a re-sign. And that might just be sending a message to the Odell Beckham camp to say, look, you know, this is where we are. This is the situation. You're not the only guy we're thinking about. You're not the only guy we're talking to. You know, that's kind of how I look at it. I mean, Quez Watkins to me feels like just a guy. I mean,
to run a bit.
Catches. Sorry, what?
He could run a bit.
Yeah, I mean, Usain Bolt can run a bit, but, you know, 142 yards last season isn't really moving the needle for me.
No.
Well, I think it actually speaks to the draft when he comes to 21 overall, for example.
He's also just agreed terms with the Steelers, so.
Oh,
okay.
Well, I think the thing is, like, if as you're looking at, say, you're looking at what the roles Cedric Wilson, Robbie Chosen, Braxton Berrios, you know, Chase Claypool, all those guys, River Craycraft, what the roles that they were put into during the season, you know, behind Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, right? Or alongside them, or, you know, whatever. And then you look at, you know, You can either draft a guy, I think, that plays that role alongside the two guys, Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Watkins, that fits, you know, very well and complements them. Or you can get a guy that can end up replacing one of them. You know, like, let's say Tyreek Hill isn't going to be here beyond this year. And I'm not sure that you can do both. And so when I see them also have interest in, like, you know, a Quez Watkins, I think that that's kind of, that might be kind of an acknowledgement that maybe you can't do both in one guy. Maybe it has to be two birds, two stones.
All right. We're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about these new rules in the NFL. But first, these words.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at wcufl.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 5-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
And we're back. And as promised, we're going to talk about some of these new rules. One really fascinating one. One that got a lot of fanfare, but, you know, not much to say. But I'm going to give Chris here the opportunity to do a little bit of housekeeping. It seems like it's a really hot topic on Dolphin Twitters these days. And I want you to explain it as easily as you can explain it. Shaq Barrett famously signed for 1 year, $9 million. At least that's what was reported. He has 5,000 void years behind him. And if evidently we're going to be broke until eternity. Okay. And we're not going to be able to field the team in 2026 because of these void years. Explain void years as simply as you can for the layman who's thinking, oh my God, they're mortgaging the future here.
Yeah, I'm not going to use numbers because people's just eyes just roll back in their head when you use numbers. And I think just trying to simplify it as much as possible, the idea is that, you know, you're taking debt against your future budgets, right? This is what you're doing. Every time you convert salary into signing bonus, you're taking debt against your future salary caps. We kind of know that. I think we all have a good sense of that. And really, it doesn't matter how you get there. It doesn't matter how you take the debt, whether it's converting a salary into a signing bonus, which then gets spread out over the life of the contract, or in this case, with void years, all you're really doing is taking advantage of real, I think it's shenanigans. I can't believe the NFL allows it, but not because there's anything negative about it, but it's so fake. It's so unbelievably fake. The idea of these void years is just you attach extra years to a contract that you also attach language to that say those years automatically void when the calendar hits a certain date. And so those aren't real years that are attached to the end of the contract. All they let you do is spread money over a lot more years instead of, you know, if the life of the contract would have been 2 years and you'd have to spread money over the 2-year life of the contract. Well, now it's a 5-year contract technically, and you can spread money over the 5 years of the contract. It's really six of one, half dozen of the other though. And so people making a big deal out of void years and saying that they're very irresponsible and such, I don't think they are properly differentiating void years from the other accounting accrual mechanisms that you use to just prevent having to expense the dollar that you paid somebody until tomorrow rather than today. It really doesn't matter how you get there. All that matters is how much debt you're accumulating along the way. And if you're accumulating too much debt, yes, there can be there can be problems. Something could break eventually. But at the same time, teams are accumulating that debt because there's no interest rate when it comes to borrowing from future salary caps. There isn't. There's no equivalent to that. You know, when you take a credit card debt, you got to pay like 15% interest sometimes or something like that. I mean, this is why you get into trouble. There's no such thing as that in the NFL. You borrow from future salary caps. It's no cost. And at the same time, the salary cap rises between anywhere from 7 to 14% every single year. So whatever debt that you've accumulated against your future salary caps just keeps getting cheaper and cheaper because, you know, if a dollar today, if, you know, if you had $100 of debt today versus a $500 salary cap, I said I wouldn't use numbers and now I'm lying. But, you know, if you had $100 of debt versus a $500 salary cap, and then next year that $500 salary cap is a $550 salary cap, you know, your $100 is less of a percentage than that, you know, that future salary cap. It's just math. That's how it works. You know, it used to be 20%. Now it's 18%, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, the debt just keeps getting smaller and smaller, just by virtue of staying the same while the salary cap keeps going up. So, you know, yeah, teams are going to take out debt against their future salary caps. And if you're not, you're losing. You're just going to be a loser. There's not going to be any kind of comeuppance. There's not going to be any kind of, you all are paying the consequences and I've been fiscally sound you know, and I'm going to mop up. No, you're just going to keep losing. And you know, the teams that actually correctly regard the financial management of these, you know, what are multi-billion dollar corporations, essentially, the teams that correctly analyze and manage their financials will do better than the ones who don't. And that does not mean, you know, applying your folksy kitchen table zero debt wisdom to the situation. That not by a long shot. You know, this is financial engineering, and if you know, I think there are a lot of people that tend to weigh in on this sort of thing, and it's like, you know, you don't have to have a background in it, but at the same time, you got to at least study up a little bit on it. And if you don't study up on it at all, and you're just trying to, you know, well, I'm smarter than all these, you know, no, just probably just stay quiet.
Yeah. Simon, well, we've been trying to define what a catch is for 1,000 years, and now we're going to define what a tackle is. And they're going to penalize this hip drop tackle if it occurs. And if the referees decide that that's what they saw, with a 15-yard penalty and an automatic first down, your thoughts on this? If you were a referee, could you? It's not like pornography, you know. You know what the old saying was, which was, "I know it when I see it."
Yeah.
Would you know a hip drop tackle if you saw it, especially really, at the speed that they play at?
Not really. I think they've made the job of being a referee more difficult, and I think they've opened up referees to heavier and heavier criticism. Remember what happened with the sack rule when it came in and sort of landing on the quarterback. And I can remember that happening in week one with Clay Matthews on Kirk Cousins at the end of the Vikings Packers game. And there was a really sort of ticky-tacky call. And I think the Vikings picked up a first down on fourth down and drove down and won the game at the end. Otherwise, the ball would turn over on downs, and Matthews had the sack where he sort of landed on Cousins, but he didn't really. But it was the first week after the rule change, and nobody really knew what was happening. And I think it's the same here. I do feel for the referees. I feel for defensive players. You know, you look at some of the monsters that are coming into the league this year. I mean, Marvin Harrison is 6'3", 217 pounds as a wide receiver. You know, you got big tight ends in the 265 pound category. You know, it's difficult to get these guys to the floor, and so I do have some sympathy with referees. I do have some sympathy with defenders, but also, look, nobody wants to see the best players injured, and for the Ravens losing Mark Andrews, and you know, there's some devastating injuries out there, but I just think, and I think some of the hyperbole that some of the defensive players and RG3 has talked about it, and our own Javon Holland and JJ Watt talking about putting flags on people, and it's a very difficult, very hot button issue. And I don't think anybody really wins. I suppose the player health wins most of all, but I think it's going to be extremely difficult to officiate and try and work out exactly what is a hip drop tackle and what isn't. And I think there'll be some really, certainly early in the season, I think there'll be some very, very difficult moments for the NFL and some very difficult calls that will probably end up costing people games.
Chris?
I think, just studying up on the background of it more and seeing that they've actually banned this in rugby, and there are some very explicit videos on what is banned and what is not, and the NFL seem to have modeled their sort of the 3 points, the three elements that have to be there for it to be an illegal hip drop tackle. They modeled it off of the rugby ban. I think it's undeniable that this form of tackling increases the chances of injury by a magnitude, and that's what the NFL is citing. They said something like you are 20 times more likely to get injured on one of these tackles than a normal tackle. And so, I do see it. The job of the referees did just get a little bit harder because, what is a hip? What has all three elements of the hip drop versus what doesn't? And that's going to be harder for them, and it might not happen in week one of the first season of this being in existence, even though we as fans and everybody else, we have very little patience, so we want it to be all perfect in week one of year one, so it might take a little bit of time, but ultimately this is for the benefit of the players. This is to prevent, Tyreek Hill took an ankle injury in the Titans game and was not the same really for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. On one of these hip drop tackles, and it had all the elements of the hip drop tackle. Actually, both players got hurt on it. The guy who did it got hurt on it too. I think that some of the reactions are getting a little bit carried away. And it's like the number of tackles that actually had that all three elements probably wasn't even all that high last year. But it did make the job of the referees a little bit harder, and it's going to be a little bit hard to feel it out. I don't see it being that difficult to coach because, you will have to not grab and twist and land your full body weight on the legs, those are the element and the elements, I think. And so, I think, people are just going to have to learn better than to do that. But there was complaining about, the Roy Williams rule, the horse collar, when that happened. But everybody at the time, I think it was unanimous. They were like, yeah, this needs to go. This is way too dangerous to the health of the player. It had to happen. And people will get over it.
All right, and now for the big one. And I'm glad that Simon has not read up on this rule, because I'm going to read it to him, and you will all experience the general shock that he would have after I give him all the particulars of a rule that, by the way, is expected to pass. This thing is expected to be voted on Thursday and expected to pass. Okay? So it's probably going to happen. All right? First of all, it's the kickoff. The new kickoff rules. How are they going to line up? Well, you're still kicking off from the 35-yard line, okay? The opposing team, however, will line up 5 yards away from you at the 40. That's change number one. Now we have a thing called the landing zone. The landing zone is from the 20-yard line to the goal line, okay? Are you following, Simon? Here's where it's going to get funky, all right? Kickoffs that hit the landing zone, meaning inside the 20, 20 to the goal line, and then go into the end zone, must be returned or downed by the receiving team. So we have live balls again, squirting around the end zone. Remember when that used to be a thing? If downed, the receiving team would get the ball at its own 20-yard line. That has changed. It used to be the 25. Now it's the 20-yard line. Kickoffs that go into the end zone and stay in bounds that are downed would give the receiving team the ball at their 30-yard line. The original proposal was the 35-yard line. Now it's the 30. It used to be the 25. So it's you're getting 5 yards. Kickoffs that go out of the back of the end zone, okay, in the air or in a bounce, would also be a touchback, and you would receive the ball at the 30-yard line. Kickoffs short of the landing zone, meaning the ball hits on the 21-yard line, will be treated like a kickoff out of bounds, and the receiving team would get the ball at its own 40-yard line. Onside kicks have to be declared, and you have to tell the other team that you're attempting it, and you can only attempt it in the fourth quarter. So gone is the surprise onside. We will no longer have surprise onsides. They're changing the onside rule. You can now have an unbalanced formation. You can have 6 on one side, 4 on the other. That's it. So that's a change from the previous rule. The big takeaways, everybody's going to be returning kickoffs this year, and everybody's going to need a good return game. And the best teams at this thing are going to be the ones that have field goal kickers that could place the ball inside of the 5-yard line on the fly. And you better be careful that it doesn't squirt into the end zone. So I don't know how teams are going to combat this, how they're going to do this. I hate that they've gotten rid of the surprise onside and that you have to declare it now, which is, I don't know any other sport where you actually have to tell the other team what you're going to do. And that's what they're legislating now in the NFL. You've heard all of this, Simon. You've heard it come out of my mouth, and I'm telling you, it's going to pass on Thursday. At least they're expecting it to pass. Your thoughts?
I just don't think I care enough.
Really?
I mean, I just don't care enough, mate. I mean, it's not going to have any effect on the game whatsoever.
You don't think?
You know, I think for those very confused about these rule changes, because even just hearing you, I know what's happening, and hearing it described, I was like, what? it's just so many different scenarios, you know, going through one different scenario on the other. I think the main gist of it is, like, go to YouTube and go look up XFL kickoff returns. And that's what it is. They ripped this off of the XFL. And the XFL, I think that they were really they were kind of soft launching this for the NFL, probably, as an idea. So basically, you have two lines of players lined up 5 yards across from each other, like some horrible 1700s, shoot off between two armies. You know, they're lined up 5 yards away from each other and standing completely still while the kicker kicks the ball. The kicker kicks the ball, and nobody can move except for the kicker, but nobody can move until the return guy catches the ball. You know, so you're standing 5 yards apart from each other on your own 35 and 40 yard line, or the receiving team's own 35 and 40 yard line, staring at each other until the return man actually catches the ball. And then you start running at each other and trying to block each other and trying to, do whatever. And while the return guy catches it, and all the rest of it is just scenarios of, like, trying to encourage you to actually have a kickoff return instead of just, I'm just going to boot it out the back of the end zone because this is stupid. Or instead of you as the return team being like, I'm just going to let this go into the end zone and take a touchback every time because this is stupid. They want the returns. They want the returns. They've crafted the rules to have returns. So in that way, it does matter. Like, it is going to affect the game. There are going to be touchdowns from teams that are ahead of this one, and there are going to be touchdowns given up by teams that are behind on this one. And so it is going to matter. I think it is going to matter a lot. And it does make me wonder if, knowing that this was coming down the pipe, you know, played into Miami's decision to keep a very well seasoned special teams coach like Danny Crossman, which was a controversial decision because Miami's special teams have not been good. And I wonder if that played into it. I wonder if it also played into, you know, seemingly during this this free agency, they made a couple of decisions that were aimed at special teams. You know, getting Saran Neal, getting Jody Fortson, getting signing back Elijah Campbell. You know, some special teams oriented decisions. I think Anthony Walker plays special teams, right? I wonder if that's part of this is we'd better bone up on the special teams because this could go the wrong way if we are wrong on this. And you're going to see, I mean, just go to YouTube and look up XFL kickoff returns. There's a couple of touchdowns with some really creative ones, creative plays that you can draw up from this structure, you know, end arounds and stuff like that. It's going to be interesting. What it makes me wonder is if you can have Miami, you know, put guys back there like Acham, who have ridiculous speed, and with everybody just being so new to this whole thing, if they're afraid of Miami's return guy in this new structure like this, they're just going to boot it out the back of the end zone. We're going to have it on the 30-yard line every single kickoff, which is a nice advantage, you know, to have the ball on the 30-yard line as opposed to the 25 or the 20. So it does make it. You're going to want to get a good return man back there that has the potential to scare the living bejesus out of the kicking team.
And Chris, you don't think that the getting rid of the onside, the surprise onside, is ridiculous? Like, how can you force a team to kick off?
I don't know. I was never really beholden to the surprise onside anyway. I don't know if I ever really considered it to be all that cool of a part of the game. I don't really care.
It actually had a very high success rate compared to
I know, but yeah, I still don't care about it.
All right, Simon, do you care about it now?
Nope.
Awesome. We will see you guys next week on Thursday. No show. On Monday, we start talking draft. And then the entire month of April is devoted to our draft series. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.